There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, and there you have it. There you go. With the qualifying.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 991, May 8th, 2023, Nasser.
Thank you, sir. I say, oh dear, coronation on both sides of the pond. King Charles in England and Emperor Maximilian in the colonies. Cinco de Mayo for Checo. Now back to Mr. Rogers, the Prince Charming of podcasting.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, no cautions, no red flags, no crashes. What is going on here? Ferrari suffering from the curse of the Bambino. You know, being in Miami, I expected a much more Latin flavor to the weekend, especially in the driver intro. But, on the other hand, LCH was the only driver who loved it, embraced it, and adored it. Patron Tequila is now the official spirit partner with Red Bull. I wonder how that came about, Mr. Mexicano Machismo. And of course, this week's interviews, Oliver Weldon. Yes, it sounds familiar. That is Dan Weldon's son. We also have Reese Gold, USF Pro 2000 driver. This was recorded down in Alabama. I also want to mention real quickly and thank the Pacific Coast Dream Machines, cars, planes, motorcycles, and more. It was awesome. Me and Dan had a fantastic time. I posted a bunch of pictures on the front page a couple of days ago. Great, great show. I highly recommend it. We'll see you there next year. And of course, ladies and gentlemen, I must mention, we need your contributions to keep this program up there on the cloud. So please just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. You know, you want to. Nas, how you doing? What the hell were you thinking with this Miami Grand Prix?
I am doing very good, sir. Thank you. I was checking the ticket prices, which were half the price of last year, but I decided to watch it on telly. And I must say, I enjoyed it very much. I know a lot of people are taking pot shots at this race, at the intro. But I'm very happy we have a Formula One race in FLA. What say you?
I thought it was great. I love Miami. I like the Latin community, the Cuban food, the Puerto Rican chicks. I mean, what's not to like? Great weather. And that's what I expected. I mean, I expected to run into a couple of Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz impersonators. The funny stuff. And, you know, the guitar player with the big hair, Chuki Chuki Chuki. I can't remember her name. But that's what I was expecting. And when I saw that intro, I was in downtown Watts listening to LL Cool J on my big box on my shoulder. I'm telling you, it blew my mind. It was definitely completely different from what I expected. And that shows my naivete at modern Miami, because apparently Desi Arnaz is nowhere to be seen.
Very nicely said, Mr. Rogers. So shall we talk a little bit about the Grand Prix of Miami?
Absolutely. Full domination. I loved it.
Same here. And you know, as Perry Como used to sing in a song, it's impossible, ask a baby not to cry.
It's impossible Tell the sun to leave the sky, it's just impossible.
It is equally impossible to keep Max at the back, even if you had the same equipment. With all due respect to Senor Sergio Perez, to think he can beat Max in the championship is like expecting Gerhard Berger to beat Ayrton Senna to become world champion at McLaren, or the two-legged Rubinho at Ferrari beating Michael Schumacher to take the title. Once again, we go back to Senor Perry Como.
It's impossible. Ask a baby not to cry. It's just impossible.
Can the ocean keep from rushing to the shore? It's just impossible. So, we can talk, if not about the shore, about the fake marina and the wonderful performance by Mr. Max Verstappen. Did you enjoy the performance? Were you surprised?
Well, I have to admit, I was on the Fernando plan. Fernando's prediction was that Max will be in P2 on lap 25. Max crushed it, made it by lap 15. I mean, he decided to pass people two at a time. He was sort of in a hurry, and it was great. I mean, the strategy was perfect for him. With Perez starting on the mediums, that was his doom. And of course, the other problem is Max Verstappen, the fastest roadrunner in town.
Well, he had to start on medium, that is Checo, because most of the guys who were in top 10, they were starting on medium, so he would have been passed by several drivers had he not started on medium. But Max is Max, you know, this victory is number 38, and he is now only 3 wins away from matching Senna's number of wins, all this in the year 25 of his life. And there is no question in my mind, Max will go 3 in a row this season, and then he will win again in 24 and 25, and when the rule changes take place in 2026, he will have Ford power, and I think that's when his championship hopes will blow up like a Pinto. You remember those days, right?
Kablamos.
Yes, until then, better make hay while the rising sun is shining. I think it's fantastic to see a driver like that. It's like, you know, whenever you see a top performer, be it Michael Schumacher in the rain in Spain 1996, or Jim Clark winning his first Grand Prix at Spa, or Jackie Stewart winning the German Grand Prix in the rain by 4 minutes, you don't have to worry about where is the competition, where are these endless passes coming. It's the performance of a lifetime that I really enjoy, and I was very happy with the way things were going. Not that I want to see Max win and Sergio not win. Best man has to win, and last time it was Checo who did a tremendous job, and Max has now restored a normal service. But before we get into nitty-gritty details, shall we do a quickie on Colley?
Yeah, we should. And boy, there was a lot of Pedro de la Rosa in the pits this weekend. Him hanging out. Boy, all those stars. Very interesting. It was a very interesting weekend, you know, which team Bezos gravitated to. And then you saw Elon Musk hanging out with the winners. So that sort of separates them real fast. I love the weekend. This is awesome stuff, Nash. You can't make this up. You could have a movie about just one Grand Prix.
Yeah, Felipe Massa was also there.
Mm-hmm. He was there with, of course, with Jacoby and Myers.
Yes, and I wanted to see him do an interview with Lewis Hamilton. That should have been pretty cool. But, you know, I missed something that is getting a lot of press. What happened with Jackie Stewart and when he was trying to talk to Roger Federer? Did you see that incident?
Oh, I did. I have it on tape. And it was hilarious to have security try to stop Jackie Stewart. It was the ultimate bizarro world where even today, it was almost like symbolic. He is the old guard. This is the new and fun TikTok sensitive Formula One. He couldn't get past the barrier. The time machine was stopping him. It was interesting. It was very, I don't know. There was a lot of stuff going on there information-wise, but he was trying to get to Roger. The problem is the clock was ticking, and they were running out of time. He was trying to help Martin Brundle interview Roger about what team, all the blah, blah. I don't even understand this big Roger Federer thing. I mean, I'm sure he's a swell guy, but come on, Jackie. But it was interesting, but yes, he got roughed up a little bit. Let me put it this way. But nobody stole his Rolex.
That's cool. And what happened to, where was Martin Brundle's BFF, Megan Thee Stallion?
Did not see Megan Thee Stallion, but, she's on a big spread on Elle magazine, so they might be still trying to get the makeup off.
Okay, that's good. Okay, so now going back to motorsports, Q1, both McLarens out. Slowest qualifier was local boy Logan Sargeant in a Williams. Daddy's little Jim Clark failed to move up to Q2 like his teammate, El Machismo, with his own L plan. In Q2, LCH out, starting place Lucky 13 on the grid, Hulk out also, first time beaten in qualifying by K-Mag, who advanced to Q3, which was good for the Danish driver. Machismo was third fastest and moving to Q3, and need I say who was the fastest ahead of second place Charles Leclerc. Q3, both Max Verstappen and Charles Leclerc were on the Durand-Durand program. Their session come undone. Leclerc does Leclerc into the wall of voodoo, a la Le Castellet. His time was good enough for 7th on the grid. With about 90 seconds remaining, the session was red flagged. And Mighty Max went wide and had to abandon his run. His best time was good enough for 9th on the grid, sharing row 5 with Shining Bottas, pardon the pun. This was first Q3 appearance for Alfa Romeo. Checo Sergio Perez said it was the worst qualifying effort of the season for him, but Checo was not complaining that he still got pole position. Joining the front row with him was an old geezer. Who could that be? The one only Machismo, Senor Fernando Alonso. And just for your sake, Mr. Rogers, I went into my virtual DNF chapel and prayed for the two Red Bull drivers steaming ahead into each other so Senor Fernando Alonso can win. And I can hear Mr. Rogers giggling all the way from California. Carlos Sainz Jr. qualified in the top 3 for the first time this season. I think this is the first time top 3 qualifiers are habla español. Kevin Magnussen, a very impressive 4th on the grid, best starting position ever for Haas F1 in a Grand Prix. What did you like in Cali and your thoughts on Cali, amigo?
It was classic. I mean, I felt bad for Logan Sargeant, but he's struggling. Albon is definitely out qualifying him. I hate to see Nick DeVries. I think maybe we should change his name to Latifi, but he's not as good as Latifi. We need full-blown screw-ups that bring out the caution. It was funny to see LCH out. And in P13, there was irony, karma, I don't know. I felt sorry for the guy. And George makes it to Q3. It was very, very good. Great qualifying. I mean, and everybody, I think everybody knows, even if Max is P9, he's pretty much got it all wrapped up. So we're back to that. It's good. Now we're going to go into the European segment. It's going to be exciting. I'm looking forward to the next few races.
Yes. And speaking of Nick DeVries, somebody on Facebook put a picture of him and his shadow was a goat and the caption was the new Latifi.
Had to happen, didn't it?
Oh yeah, the world of Formula One is pretty brutal and ruthless. Okay, so the race, Miami Grand Prix, was 74th Formula One championship race in the US, third to be held in the Orange State. The winner, Mr. Max, and frankly speaking, Mr. Rogers, what you just said, confirmation of what you just said, that people are used to Max coming to the front regardless of where he starts. The headline I used at the start of the show I wrote that down on Saturday, way before the race. And the reason is very simple. In today's Grand Prix racing, in normal course of business, Max is a Caterpillar bulldozer with a Pratt & Whitney jet engine. This guy is coming through regardless of his position on the starting grid. And I'm going to tell you something. If he starts dead last, okay, given the current situation with all the teams, he will have no problem coming into the top three. And if there is a full course caution, he's going to win that race. So this guy is an incredible talent and it's a joy to watch. And like any all the great drivers, he has his, you know, moments and situations, but nobody's perfect. Okay, he started ninth on hard tires. By lap 15 of 57, he was second behind his teammate on medium tires. Gap was less than 4 seconds. Max winning the race did not surprise me. What was surprising, there was no caution, and Max going 45 laps on his hard tires at a very fast pace. And he was matching and going even faster on his than his teammate who was on medium tires. But what else would you expect from a talent generally regarded as find of the century and not a decade? 3 wins and 2 second-place finishes from 5 races. I fully expect him to win more races this year than he did last year, which in itself was a new track record. He's on it. When people say Miami Grand Prix was boring, that's BS and mega malarkey. Just my personal opinion. I got to see one of the greats of Grand Prix racing do what he does best, proving we don't need 35 cautions or 7 stages to enjoy a motor race. Max also set the fastest lap to do a complete Viva la Revolucion on Checo. He now has a 14-point lead in the championship over his teammate. Your thoughts on his performance, sir? Would you compare, would you say it was like, I mean, it was a different situation, but as impressive as 2005 Imola Grand Prix, I would say.
I mean, it's not as impressive simply because of a completely different world where there were Michelins and Bridgestones and world champions and new champions. It was exciting. No, Max is now coming into his own full domination. And now he's getting, you know, the boos that Schumacher used to get for winning all the time. And so did Hamilton get booed for winning all the time. So it's fascinating, but he's there. It's impressive to watch him slice through that field so quickly was awesome. And it's great to see Adrian Newey's car working so perfectly.
You know, I remember, I think it was the 1988 Italian Grand Prix. And during the telecast, I believe it was ESPN in those days, Phil Hill was one of the invited guests to, you know, as a color commentator. And, you know, McLaren was, it was that race that did not win all the races. But before that happened with Senna and Schleser, Phil Hill made a comment that it's interesting in today's world of such competitiveness, a team can have such a dominating performance. And that's what we have with Max now. I mean, absolutely incredible talent. And you have to see it to believe how good this guy is. It's simple as that.
It is exciting.
Now we go to a guy who finished second, Sergio Perez. He made his pit stop on lap 21 to change from medium to hard tires. I was really, really expecting a little bit of rain or at some sort of a full course caution, and that would have changed the situation, but it never happened. Now, Checo is definitely fighting the good fight, but like Rubinho and Eddie Irvine, he's up against a mountain that is sky high. 2 wins and 2 second places is very good performance as teammate to Max. Australia was the only race so far where he was not on the podium, finishing 5th. And, you know, I have to say, Checo has done better job as teammate than Daniel Ricciardo did. Checo has not gotten flustered and bailed out of the team. So I think this guy has, I really respect him for his commitment to his craft because, as I said before, he never won any championship in junior Formula, and I never thought he'll make it to Formula 1. All the focus was on Esteban Gutierrez, who, even in the words of Joe Ramirez, is faster than Sergio Perez, but here we have Sergio Perez trying to win the championship. As James Hinchcliffe, by the way, which network did you watch? Did you watch on ESPN these days, right?
Correct, but because it was the United States of America, it was on free TV ABC 7.
Well, that's very good, and they were picking up the Sky broadcast, right, with David Croft?
You're forgetting everything, Nasser. Not only were they picking up the Sky broadcast, because that was very good broadcast, because your friend Danica was there in a hot little dress.
Yeah, well, you know, I was watching on the F1 TV thing, and they have David Coulthard and other people. So that's why I asked. So on the F1 TV network, they have James Hinchcliffe as one of the commentators. And he said that Checo can put fast times like Max and sometimes even faster, but he cannot do it on a consistent basis. And I think this is where Max will do a monster mash on him throughout the season. And, you know, I had a conversation with a friend of mine who was living in Vegas. This was many years ago when Senna was racing. And he was telling me that he did an analysis of selected races, 3 or 5 races of every lap of these, you know, 3 or 4 races he had selected. And he told me he could not believe how consistent Ayrton Senna was lap after lap after lap. So I think that's another hallmark of the very great drivers, you know. They can just pound fast lap after fast lap. There's no point in putting in a fast lap and going to sleep for 3 laps. Or leading the race and crashing. Okay, I believe it was last year, I don't know if it was 2 years, definitely not here, this year, when Sergio said that beating Max is very hard, and he found out again in Miami on Sunday. Checo has to make sure when Max wins, he is second always, or as Fittipaldi would say, for sure. No disrespect to Checo as a driver, but going against Max, I think his best hope for a championship is a few DNFs for Max and then do a Rosberg on him in the closing races of the season. And I'm thinking, Mr. Rogers, what would have been the pace difference between the two Red Bull drivers if both of them had started on the front row? What say you?
We know it would have still done Max. Max brings 6 tenths, Nasser, you know that. No matter what Checo is going to do, Max will be ahead. That's called the Fernando factor.
The Fernando factor. I thought somebody brought 7 tenths to a team, but we don't want to talk about that, do we?
I'm fine and dandy, Nasser.
Well, we've come to the third man on the podium, your man, Dios Alonso. He's got the Dale Earnhardt number this season. He is the El Intimidator. Of the 5 races so far, he was 3rd in 4 races and 4th in Azerbaijan. And he can say gracias to Leclerc, only podium of the season, for raining on his Spanish parade in Baku. This is what I find very interesting. The oldest driver on the grid is getting on the podium on regular basis, while his young teammate has only got 1 top 5 so far this season, 4th in Australia. But you know, like Henry Ford II, he used to say, my name is on the wall, so Lance can tell Nando, my name is on the team. Must be nice. See, I was listening to a conversation on another podcast, and they were asking if Lance would still be in Formula One if Daddy did not own the team. What is your take on that?
It's possible he has moments of brilliance where he is a good driver. Let's face it, if you're in Formula One, you're a good driver. And he's had good sparring on the track. He's just a little sloppy. And the problem is teammates Fernando, which does not help at all.
No, that will do in for anyone except one, as we have seen this movie before. Okay, so continuing with Fernando, I think he will hear the winning drums if the bulls slash each other's throat like the Mercedes driver did in Barcelona in 2016. Not that I want to see this happen, but I definitely, definitely want to see Fernando win a race this year. Machismo is third. He's also third in the championship. He's stuck on number 3 at this stage with 75 points. Now we come to George Russell, who provided the funniest moment for me. The future of Mercedes is here. Unfortunately, he arrived at Mercedes when their mojo was gone, but he did manage to get his first win last year against all odds. Late in the race, he had a moment of irrational exuberance when he thought he was behind the second Red Bull of Sergio Perez, only to be told, "Wake up, the car ahead is a Williams."
It was the best. I felt so wonderful and fuzzy inside. It was hilarious, but we need moments like that. But it was funny. I mean, don't forget, remember when Lewis Hamilton in his youth went into the wrong pit stop, went into the McLaren?
Yes, and Jenson Button also made that mistake. And, well, Lewis Hamilton ran in a red light and went into the back of Kimi Raikkonen. That was even better.
That was quality first right there.
But you know what was even more classic than that? I mean, if it was Montoya, he would have probably given him a karate chop or something. But Kimi walked up to Lewis and showed him the red flag and then walked away. Talk about man of few words or no words. Okay, where are we? The fourth in Miami was George's second top five this season. He finished in the same position in Saudi Arabia, and he is now sixth in the championship with 40 points. Now we come to, I don't know what has happened to this hombre, Carlos Sainz Jr. He was fifth. He was not a smooth operator in the pit lane, locking up the tires, and as they say, where there is smoke, there is fire, and he was given a 5-second penalty for speeding in the pit lane. The prancing horses are really running on three legs, which is very sad to see. Carlito has not yet made it to the podium this season, fifth in the race and fifth in the championship with 44 points. Remember how impressive he was in his first year at Ferrari, especially with Charles Leclerc as a teammate? Remember those days?
I do remember those days. I remember, you know, I don't know what's going on at Ferrari. I know Vasseur has just stepped in. He's trying to clean it up. But it does seem a bit chaotic. And, you know, I bring up the marinara sauce. I mean, it is the curse of the Bambino. Something is wrong there. And I'm not sure what it is. And it's struggling. I mean, I think Carlos is bombarded by bizarre rumors, innuendo. He doesn't know which way is up, which way is down. Leclerc, he's making mistakes when he shouldn't be making mistakes. And the Ferrari is not as fast as it should be, but sometimes it's really fast. It's so inconsistent. And I believe it's the engineering and setup. I think they have a fast car. But the problem is they need an exorcism. They need a professional to come in there, gather everybody. I don't care if it's Guido Sarducci or some other professional, but they need to be exorcised, get the evil out, the spirits, and start anew with the blessing of the Pope.
You know, in the time Christian Horner has been team principal at Red Bull, Ferrari has had like six or seven head honchos come and go. And remember that hipster Mattiacci? He lasted a few months. So you cannot have this revolving door, the Willie Horton program, somebody's coming, somebody's going out. They need some serious person. And I think, you know, their problem is, I don't know if it was Luca di Montezemolo or his successor, but anyway, somewhere after the Ross Brawn period and Michael Schumacher, Halcyon Days, somebody in hierarchy in Ferrari has made a comment that they want to see the team become what it was, an Italian team, you know, not run by English people, French people. In this day and age, you get the very best. Who cares where they are coming from? Especially if they can take you to the checkered flag first. So I think if that was their philosophy, they are paying the price right now. Because, you know, when they had Ross Brawn, they had Rory Byrne, Michael Schumacher, Jean Todt, the very best money can buy. And we all know what the results were. So I think they need to do something. I think their situation is such dire that even Pope cannot help them right now.
Well, that's possible. But what I believe is the culture, the Italian culture, they need a supreme leader. They need an El Duce to run that team.
Yes, there you go. Run the team on time, I guess. Okay. Now, we talked about... we haven't spoken about our friend, your friend, Lewis Hamilton. As you would say, oh, the memories of having a dominating car at McLaren and Mercedes for so many years. LCH was sixth in the race, and where have those days gone? And more importantly, when will they come back, if ever? There are reports that he will sign a two-year extension with Mercedes. I think he needs a minimum 3 years contract, because the next 2 years will also go the way of Red Bull Max and their super upgraded GP2 engine they have now. Lewis is currently fourth in the championship with 56 points. Second in Australia has been his only podium appearance so far this season. Well, on paper it looks like Alonso will win a race this season before Lewis. Do you think Lewis will get a win this year?
No, I don't think they'll get a win, because the car is showing some terrible issues. And in race pace they're good, but in qualifying they have a lot of problems. And Toto knows this car is cursed. It's still, let's face it, it's still a W13 with a little extra emblems. Let's face it, that was bad karma. It was just stinky. They want to get out of this whole mess. And that's why Allison is back. They're going to come up with pods. They're going to come up with a good car. But it's going to be a little late. And not only that, but everybody keeps forgetting, Lewis is getting older. I mean, let me put it this way. Did you hear what George said about the intro? He hated it. A waste of time. Because he's super young. Where not only did LCH love this beautiful intro, he thought it was great that Formula One is trying new things. And he had to mention that he used to listen to LL Cool J when he was a kid. And he was so happy to see him. It was fabulous.
We have to move on from that. Okay, now we come to 7th place, Mr. Charles Leclerc. What a difference a year makes. Last year he had 2 wins after the first 3 races. This year he has 2 DNFs and 7th place finish after the first 3 races. His only podium of the season was in Baku. You know, when he was going and qualifying, he was really on it. And I had an inkling that maybe this guy is going way too fast. And then I was not surprised that he spun out. I don't know if he's frustrated or overdriving the car, but it's just one of the other aspects of Ferrari team. It's just a fragmented team and everybody's going in different direction. Very sad to see for such a magical name in the world of motor racing. And like their misery loves company partner Mercedes, the Ferraris were never a factor, not even a fake threat to get in the top 3. Forget about winning the race. I'll tell you, the way Red Bull is going, Checo is on fire and Max has been an inferno from the day he came into single-seater motor racing. I'm beginning to fear they might win every race. The only thing that's going to stop them is some sort of a rain or bizarre situation where they get caught out by the circumstances or the safety car. Do you think it's possible they will win all the races?
It's possible, but like you said, force majeure will intervene. Something will happen. We will get rain eventually. And these days in Formula One, we've seen it all from Spa, where nothing happens for hours, and let's hope that doesn't happen. But yeah, we're going to see some bizarre stuff. And that's the only chance that Fernando is going to get to win a race, or maybe a Gasly again, because the Alpines look good in qualifying. They have good pace. They're just a little erratic, and once again, they need better leadership and more chop-chop. But it's interesting. Well, if Ferrari can't get it together and Mercedes can't get it together, I think it's an opportunity for Alpine to shine. Look at what Haas looks like sometimes when they brighten up a little bit. What's good about all this is it's giving the little guys an opportunity. And really, McLaren is the big loser because they're missing out on the opportunity. And God, to just be out in Q1, disastrous. But I still think it's going to be a really great season, and every race is going to be very entertaining.
Yes, sir, and going back to the rain-affected race, guess who is the best when it's slippery, when wet? Max Verstappen. The only guy who is as good as him in the rain is Lewis Carl Hamilton, but he does not have the package, so we will see. And speaking of your friendly compadre at Alpine, they finished 8th and 9th. Gasly was 8th. So both Alpines were in the points. Now, the rumor mill is there is trouble brewing at the Renault-owned team. CEO Laurent Rossi has said that if performance does not improve and targets are not met, there will be consequences and he will not wait till the end of the season. Now, this is the guy who told Alain Prost, your services are no longer required. However, that is said in French. Rumors are that he may be borrowing the machete from Dr. Marco and do a chop-chop on Otmar Szafnauer, and this is based on published reports. 4 points scored by Gasly in Miami was the first time in the last three races he finished in top 10. Like his teammate Ocon, he is also Francais and also one-hit wonder at this stage. Like Gasly, he also scored points for the first time in three races. His only other point-scoring finish was in Saudi Arabia. So it's not looking la vie en rose for Alpine. The team is sixth in the championship with 14 points, same as McLaren. Ferrari is ahead of them on 78 points, so both are lost. Storming of the end stone may be happening before summer break. You know, when these kind of reports come out and the CEO is pointing fingers, I will not be surprised if Otmar Szafnauer is let go. And he basically took his name, saying that the buck stops with him. Do you think Otmar will survive the season at Alpine?
It depends on how transpire in the next few Grand Prix through the European leg. I mean, if they do well in Monaco, Imola, we'll see what happens. Szafnauer knows, and you know, he's an American, the French team. If he was successful, they could put up with it. But if he's not, they're going to say, Yankee, you go home.
Okay, we'll see how it works out. Final points from 10th place went to Kevin Magnussen. He really needed this finish and the qualifying effort he put in to start on the second row, because so far he has been hulkanized by Nico. And I hope it's also good for this small team, Haas have fun. And this, of course, gives Gunther Steiner to come out with more flowery language, hopefully in a positive sense. But we will see how this thing works out. Now we come to points to ponder. The weekend saw McLaren team start their 400th Grand Prix with Mercedes power. Very impressive. After only 5 races, Red Bull is leading the Constructors' Championship by more than twice the points of second place team, 224 to 102 for Aston Martin. And of the 102 points for Aston Martin, 75 were scored by Senor Alonso. Very, very impressive, but not surprising. 8 different states have hosted Formula One events in the U.S. Sebring in Florida, Dallas in Texas, and Riverside, California remain one-hit wonders. Mario Andretti is the only American driver to win his home Grand Prix, which he achieved at Long Beach 1977. And Yuki Tsunoda, our potty mouth boy, has been behaving pretty good lately. He finished 11th. This is the third time in 5 races he has finished 11th. He finished in the same position in the opening 2 races. His teammate Nyck de Vries is on slippery slope. Somebody on the web called him Nyck de Fired. He and Logan Sargeant are the only 2 drivers pointless so far this season. I think Dr. Marco is getting his machete sandblasted for some soon-to-be chop-chop action. You know, Nyck de Vries, I feel bad for him because it took him a while to win in Formula Renault, but he did that. Then he was Formula 2 champion. Very impressive drive. Formula E champion. Tremendous job on his Grand Prix debut, driving a Williams of all the cars. And now he's just, looks like done blowed up career. What say you?
It's done blowed up. It's done. He didn't have it. It happens to the best of them. Once they get the F1, it's just too much pressure. And they just fall apart. I mean, there was no contact except for one driver in the opening lap in Miami, and that was Nyck de Vries slamming into the rear of Lando Norris. I just don't think he's got it, and it's time to move along. IndyCar, NASCAR, and of course, Brazilian tin tops.
And Mr. Rogers, I have to say that Miami Grand Prix is here to stay because of the big multicultural crowd they have in Miami, which is good. And there were, I think, like 25,000 more people showed up during the weekend than last year. And I was there last year. It was a jam-packed party. It was very impressive. And I know they were, it was amazing. It was, from my point of view, it was very well organized. Everything was great. But I do understand the problem took place in the paradise, the VIP suite. They ran out of food and water and this and that, which I'm sure they have rectified. And the paddock area was inside the stadium, Hard Rock Stadium, which was very, very cool. So I think this race is here to stay. Those who bitch and moan about the race, I mean, some people will complain no matter what you do. But I'm very happy we have a Formula One race in a town in America where there should be one. So I am looking forward to the success of this race down the road also. And the next race, sir, is the, this is interesting, 2 weeks. This is the name of this race, Formula One Qatar Airways Grand Prix made in Italy and Emilia-Romagna 2023. Now, Emilia-Romagna is the region in Italy where Imola is located. And Imola and Hockenheim Ring, how can you forget these tracks, if you know what I mean? So, shall we take a Dasani or a Aquafina break?
Well, I don't know about you, but I'm going to tip my glass to King Charles, and I'm going to have a Dubonnet. So we'll be back after this brief message.
Our shout-outs last week, let's get through them now. The podcasters at F1Weekly.com.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, the Swami himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. And today we go all the way to Monaco, Monte Carlo, Formula E. Kiwis flying high. Nick Cassidy winning the race and taking the championship lead. Fellow New Zealander Mitch Evans was second. Second in the championship is Pascal Wehrlein, who finished 11th in the race driving for Porsche. Italian Formula 4. And Mr. Rogers, you'll be happy to hear what I did on over the weekend. You know, there's a lot of racing action from around the world. And this time I watched the Alpine racing series from Manicourt. Have you seen any of those races?
Yes. Also, the Clio Cup was in Manicourt.
I'll leave that up to you and Toto.
I understand.
Okay, so we had Italian Formula 4, 3 races at Misano Adriatico. 2 of them were won by Red Bull Junior Arvid Lindblad. He is Mr. International. Papito from Sweden, Mamita from India, based in London town, which means he is enjoying Swedish meatballs with spicy curry and garlic naan. He leads the championship with 129 points. Second is New York City boy and McLaren Jr. Ugo Ugochukwu on 81 points. And this is Ugo's second year in Formula 4, so he has to win this championship. Otherwise, Zak Brown may not be very happy.
Boy, you'll never have a boring day, 'cause you're a New York City boy, where 7th Avenue meets Broadway.
Next, we come to money matters. Formula One generated $381 million in revenue for the sports commercial rights holder Liberty Media in the first 3 months of the year, an increase of 6% over 2022. So things are going very good. And what is interesting, the payment to team amounted to $112 million just in the first 3 months. And I'm sure bulk of it went to Red Bull. So this is an increase of 12% given to the teams. And these teams are still worried about Andretti or another team coming in, which is so, so pathetic. With that, we come to Lou Reed reportage and take a hitchhike across the USA and look at all the wonderful places Formula One has been in this country since 1950. As we all know, the first decade of Formula One championship included the Indy 500. The first Formula One Grand Prix on American soil was in Florida in 1959 in Sebring, won by Bruce McLaren in a coupe. In what has become a tradition and still continues, the next Formula One Grand Prix took place on the left coast in Riverside, California, not too far from L.A. Stirling Moss was the winner. 1969, thanks to the efforts of a lawyer by the name of Kimran Argertsinger, Watkins Glen in the Finger Lakes region of New York became a finger-licking good spot for the U.S. Grand Prix for many years and still remembered very fondly by those who raced and went there. The first Formula One race at Watkins Glen turned out to be the first ever Grand Prix win for Lotus Cars, entered by the private Rob Walker team, making the driver Innes Ireland from Scotland one-hit wonder. This track also saw the only win in Formula One by a 16-cylinder engine in the back of Jim Clark's Lotus in 1966, and of course, this engine could only come from BRM. In 1968, Mario Andretti made his Grand Prix debut in grand style by qualifying his Lotus on pole position. Bobby Unser also raced in this event. From 1969, there was a hat-trick of drivers winning their first Grand Prix at the Glen. In 1969, Jochen Rindt of Austria was the winner. In 1970, it was Brazilian Emerson Fittipaldi, both driving for Colin Chapman Lotus team. In 1971, it was French driver François Sivert winning for Ken Tyrrell. Unfortunately, at the same track 2 years later, he would die in a vicious accident during qualifying. In 1976, it was back to the left coast, LBGP, Long Beach Grand Prix. Clara Gazzoni led a Ferrari 1-2 over Austrian teammate Niki Lauda. 1977, as we said earlier, Mario Andretti became the only driver, American driver, to win his home Grand Prix. Of course, driving for Lotus. Nelson Piquet scored his first F1 victory in Long Beach, 1980, driving for Brabham. And then came a race in the Motor City at Detroit. The last F1 victory for Cosworth DFE engine was in the streets of Detroit by Michele Alboreto in his Tyrrell in 1983. The last three races in Motown from 1986 to 1988 were won by Ayrton Senna. In 1984, it was time to establish an F1 dynasty in Dallas, but the experiment had lasted only 1 year, with Keke Rosberg giving Honda their first ever turbo win in a Williams. From the humid heat of Dallas, it was time to try dry heat in Phoenix, Arizona. All three races were won by McLaren, one by Prost, and the other two by Senna. And it was in Phoenix that Monsieur Jean Alesi had a tremendous motivation and put on a great fight, which really propelled his career, and he was driving a Tyrrell and duking out with Senna's McLaren. Vegas Baby, 1982, Part 1. The Autodroma in the parking lot of Caesar's Palace was the scene of the season finale. Michele Alboreto won the race for Ken Tyrrell, while Keke Rosberg picked up the world championship. Back in FLA, Formula One is now playing Miami Beach Rumba since 2022. And later in the year, it's time to gamble again in Las Vegas on Thanksgiving weekend. With all the hype and promotion by Liberty Media, hopefully this time Formula One will not be turkey of a race in Vegas. Mr. Rogers, would you like to gobble up your opinion on sustainability of the Las Vegas Formula One Grand Prix race?
I think it's going to be very sustainable. Everything is there. It's glitz and glamour every day, 24/7. So Formula One will land, will make millions, and then they'll leave, and then they'll keep doing it. I think it's going to work out very, very well in Vegas.
Okay, now let's listen to our young drivers we interviewed. Shall we start with Oliver Weldon?
Perfect, Nasser.
Yes, sir. This conversation took place at the Orlando karting circuit not too long ago, and Dan Weldon has two sons, Oliver and Sebastian. And so this conversation with Oliver, and we will hopefully catch up with Sebastian when I go to a go-kart race in the near future. So please enjoy this conversation with Oliver Weldon. Okay, folks, I'm here in Orlando with a young, fast kart racer, Mr. Oliver Weldon. Oliver, first of all, welcome to F1 Weekly. How are you today?
Good, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here with you talking. So
you were second in the race yesterday, third today. Happy with the results or mad as hell at not winning one of the races?
I'm quite happy because I haven't had a lot of podiums in this new class. So I would say I'm pretty happy. P2 is really good, but you always want first, so.
Well, I saw your whole race today and also yesterday, and today you started, I believe, 10th, right? And you picked up several places. Tell us a little bit about your moves.
So I started 10th. I just tried to get a good start so I wouldn't fall back any positions. I just started to pick off a couple people in the laps, and towards the end I got up to 3rd and just battled with the 2nd place guy, so that was pretty good.
Okay. How many races are you planning to do this year?
A lot, I think, in karting. I'm not sure the exact number, but I'd have to do this series, the Pro Tour, USPKS, and then Rock is another series.
Okay. And how old are you now, and how old were you when you started racing?
I just turned 12. I turned 12 in March, and I started karting when, I believe I was 5. I just started, and I've been doing it for 6 years, so.
Very important question, and you have to be honest. Who is faster, Oliver Weldon or Sebastian Weldon?
I would say we're both faster in different ways. I mean, Sebastian's a lot more he's a lot more smart on the track. I can be a little bit dumb sometimes, but I would say we're both faster in different ways.
Okay, you and your brother are affiliated with Andretti Autosport. What advice Michael has given you about becoming a successful racing driver?
Yeah, he's talked to me how you have to be on the track and off the track. I talk to him a lot when I usually go to the IndyCar races. Yeah.
Did he ever say don't be like Paul Tracy on and off the track?
No, he never told me that. But
okay. Have you ever met his father, who was also a very successful racing legend?
I've met him. I met him maybe once or twice, but I've seen him in the double seater at the Indy 500 where they do that. But other than that, I've seen him once or twice. So that was pretty cool.
What has been your best moments in your racing career so far?
I would say probably when I joined Andretti. That was really cool to be part of Andretti Autosport. And probably a race was Rock Vegas. It's a pretty big race, and I did really well that weekend. I got 2nd, and barely. It was 0 point something. So it's a pretty good race.
Okay. Your favorite karting track in the U.S.?
So far I think it would have to be NOLA. That track also has a kart track, which is pretty cool. I think I like it because it's very long, and it's very smooth, and it's just super fun to drive at.
Have you done any racing in Europe or plan to do?
I have not. I've watched my brother race there. It looked pretty cool, but maybe I race there sometime this year. I'm not sure.
Okay. What is your game plan after karting? What series are you interested in?
After karting, I'll probably go to cars. Maybe some of the Skip Barber stuff like my brother. And then maybe USF or something, I don't know, but I'll just see.
Okay, we'll keep following your career. Okay, long-term goal, IndyCar racing or Formula One?
They're both really cool. Whatever one I can get to first, that would be pretty cool. I know a lot of IndyCar drivers, but F1 it's really fast and it looks pretty cool, but I'll see where my path takes me.
Speaking of Formula One, do you have a favorite driver or a team in Formula One?
I really look up to Max Verstappen. He's always really fast, and he's.
And the team?
Probably Red Bull. A really fast team. Max is on there, Checo. Yeah.
Okay, I thank you very much for your time. One request, will you please tell our listeners, we have listeners all over the world, how they can follow your career, your website, your social media?
I have Instagram. It's oliver.weldon. I only have Instagram, but yeah.
Okay. Thank you so much. Very nice to meet you. All the best.
Oliver, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. Nasser?
Yes, sir. And our next conversation, this was recorded in Sweet Home, Alabama, and is with young American talent from Miami, Mr. Reese Cole. He just announced a few days ago that he is leaving the Hunkos Racing team and going to the HMD. He's in Indy Lights Series. Last year he was in Indy Pro, won 4 races, and I think he was 2nd in the championship. And he's a good young American talent, so I thank him for his time. And we had interviewed him last year also. And a friendly chap. I've met him several times at different racetracks. So please enjoy this conversation. Okay, folks, I'm here in beautiful Birmingham, Alabama, with Mr. Reese Cole. Reese, good to see you again. We followed your career last year. How are you today?
I'm doing good, thanks. Glad to be talking with you again. Just finished qualifying here, so.
How is the weekend going so far?
It's been up and down. You know, we've struggled a little bit, but we were 14th in practice. Now we qualified 7th, so it's an improvement. There's still more, but overall it's decent. Hopefully we can get some good points tomorrow.
Mr. Gold got silver in last year's US Pro 2000 Series. 4 wins, very impressive. Happy with your performance, or was there more in the Newmont mine?
Last year? Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, I am happy. It got a lot of poles and wins, but I think there were some weekends that I didn't capitalize when I should have that cost me the championship. But, you know, it's still a good result, so I'm happy with it.
Okay. What was your best performance throughout the season? Any not-so-high moments?
I think for us, you know, the last race, Portland, was our best. 2 poles and 2 wins. And also, you know, we won at Barber and Indy, and Lucas Oil almost won. I think Road America, we qualified pole there, and we finished like 7th and 5th. So I think we didn't capitalize there, as well as Gateway. But, you know, that's racing. It happens.
Okay, all your wins came, like you said, on road courses. How comfortable are you with ovals?
Depends though. I mean, Lucas Oil, I love. I got pole there. We just couldn't finish the race. Gateway, I still need to learn some things there. We struggled there both years, so hopefully this year we can find something there.
Okay. Let me ask you a question. You did 2 years in U.S. Formula 2000. What do you learn most in first season where the difference really shows in the second year? And that happens with a lot of drivers.
It's hard to pinpoint just one thing. There's so many different aspects that going into next year, you can just put everything together. Just there's so many things that go on. Just having that second year to like ready all the stuff behind you helps going a lot the second year.
Okay. You have stayed with the same team, Hunkos. What are expectations in Indy next, which is the final frontier before Indy cars?
Yeah, you know, it's my first year here and also the team's first year back for like 2 years, so just do as best as we can, hopefully get some wins and podiums and see what we can do.
Are you ready to rumble in the Indy 500 next year?
Oh, I'm ready to rumble. I'd love to be in there, so hopefully we can make it happen.
Now, in the opening round in St. Pete, you know, I live in Tampa, so it's a home race for me. There was some body slamming with your teammate from last season. Have you guys discussed and put this behind you?
Yeah, we've talked it over. We're good. So, you know, it was a racing incident. I probably pushed a... It's a racing, you know, so I think, but we've talked now, we're all good, so.
Okay, who do you see as main challengers for the championship and for Rookie of the Year honors? Quite a good talent pool here.
Yeah, I mean, there's 19 drivers now, so I think so many people are challengers, not just one, but, you know, even rookies too, so it's hard to pinpoint one, but we'll just do the best we can and see where we end up.
And your teammate here, his uncle used to be in Formula One. How's your working relationship with him and how good is he?
It's been going good. He brings a lot of experience. You know, we've been getting along good together. He brings a lot of experience from Europe. So I think he learned some stuff from me. I learned some stuff from him. So I think we can put it together and gain some speed.
You are very quick. Any desire or plans to race in Formula 3 or Formula 2 across the pond?
You know, I'd love to give it a try one day. But right now, my full focus is on IndyCar. But if the opportunity is there, I'd love to give it a try.
You know, I may have asked you this question, but I'd love to ask this question from racing drivers. Once you go to IndyCar racing, what's more important to you, winning the championship or the big race in May?
That's hard. You know, the 500 is such a big race, and to win it is awesome. So I'd probably have to go 500, but also, if you win the championship, it also means you're winning races, which is what matters to potentially go to Formula One, but also to keep your ride here. So,
okay, we spoke about your interest in the stock market last year, and I asked you last year about Netflix, and you said, good advice, stay on the sidelines. What say you today?
Well, we see what happened to Netflix now. I've taken a little step back from the stock market just because it's so unpredictable now, and no one cares about market cap anymore or revenue apparently, but So I'm looking at other avenues now, but I still look at it now. I still enjoy, you know, doing some fun trading here and there.
Okay, your sponsor is the Ticket Clinic. So the question I have, if I can't go 55 and they give me a ticket at 95 miles per hour, can you get me off the hook?
Oh, absolutely. Any ticket, speeding, DUI, we can take care of it.
Well, you're such a nice guy. Okay, thank you so much. And would you have a message for our listeners? And please tell them again about your social media.
Yeah, so please follow me on social media on Instagram, RiscoTree. And thank you, everyone, for following along and supporting us. Thanks to the Ticket Clinic and Junkos Hollinger.
Thank you.
Reese, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. Nasser?
And sir, finally, we come to famous last words. Today they come from Sunday's winner who was booed before and after the race. Max said, and I quote, "I take the trophy home and they go back to their houses and they can have a nice evening," end quote. And with that, we wish all the F1 Weekly familiar members good evening, good afternoon, good morning, as the case may be. Thank you for listening. Till we meet next time in Palatial Studios.